We're about to have a conversation here with David Simon, writer, journalist, former Sun reporter, of course, creator of The Wire. He, along with Bill Zorzi, who also worked at The Sun and worked on The Wire, put out this new series for HBO called Show Me a Hero, which is on right now, and they join us in the studio. David and Bill, good to have you both here.
It's good to be here.
It's been a long time.
Thanks.
It has been.
So is this, when I heard about Show Me a Hero coming on, this is the piece you've been, Bill, been talking about for years, saying that you wanted to, is this the story you've been talking about for a long time? You want to get this on the air? This is the piece you've been thinking about?
I have. It is. It right? is, in fact. It's been 13 years. It's coming up on 14 years since I first heard about it.
So tell me how this started with the two of you. I know you've known each other for a long time and worked together on some stuff. So how did this Show Me a Hero happen?
I called the city desk at an inopportune moment. I'll let Bill take it from there.
it was clear to me that you had forgotten what it was like to be on deadline. And I was working the desk, and I had a...
Hence Blown Deadline Productions.
A bevy of young reporters standing in line before me, and he...
To be punished savagely.
locked in the punishment closet. And, I pick up the phone. It's, hey, it's me, This, oh, that me. And then, I want you to take a look at this book. And, he tells me the book and blah, blah. I'm like, okay. And I hang up. Okay, so talk to you later. I got to go, So he calls back like 2 weeks, 3 weeks later.
Did you read it?
Did you read that book? I'm like, on deadline again. I don't know if it was like he got up, at 4 or 5 p.m. or
no,
what.
It wasn't my deadline.
Yeah. No, God forbid that. I said, what was the name of the book again? It was Show Me a Hero. I said, okay, Show Me a Hero. And, I said, well, you better get it and read it because we've got an appointment in 3 weeks with HBO in L.A., which we did.
And the story is, an interesting story. I remember when the thing happened in Yonkers, I was reading about it in the housing desegregation case under Jimmy Carter, but never read the book. Never even thought about the book until I saw this was coming up. But this story, it's a pretty powerful piece when you think about what you're telling here, another story of a northern city and racism.
Well, it's contemporary. It just keeps happening.
Right now, right?
It happened here in Baltimore in a decade ago when they tried to do Move to Opportunity in eastern Baltimore County.
Right. Bob Ehrlich and the others led the white people who did not want to have black folks
move
in
it. Same right? political same dynamic. It's happening right now in Dallas, except actually HUD's folding up their tent and giving up, basically. The Crown administration is not really following through on the ruling that they got. And it's happening two towns north of Yonkers right now in Tarrytown. Westchester County has stayed fairly intransigent when it comes to the idea of shared space and integration.
Absolutely. It became a big campaign issue the last time around for the Westchester County executive.
It's just everywhere we try it in America, the resistance to breaking down any sense of a hyper-segregated society is really resisted. It's just really resisted.
So it is timeless. So tell the story a bit. Since you finally read the book.
I don't know. That was 13 years ago. No, I did read the book, actually, on the plane out to L.A.
By Lisa Belkin.
Yeah, it is by Lisa Belkin.
New York Times reporter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think it'll be re-released soon.
Yeah, should be.
For her. It's a story. What drew me to the story is, the main arc of the story is a political one, which is this young mayor, the youngest mayor of any.
27 years, 28,
27. 28 when he was when he took office. And just sort of he had run on the issue of the housing and had chosen not to or chosen to appeal. And that was really the only difference between the incumbent mayor, six-term incumbent, and him. And he won, only to find out 3 days before he was inaugurated that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals denied the city's appeal unanimously, a three-judge panel, very conservative bunch up there. So he had no choice but to, he thought, and I think, and he was right, but to, you know, go ahead and have the first portion of the judge's order to build 200 units of public housing in primarily white East Yonkers.
Right. So it meant that about 200 black and Dominican Puerto Rican families would be moving into
white neighborhoods.
White neighborhoods.
Right.
And everybody feared the last generation's mistakes in public housing, which were big, tall high-rises, you know, condensed, massive projects holding a lot of poor people that generally are destabilizing to an environment. You know, that much concentrated poverty does lead to, you know, it's a very unpragmatic way to ground a community. And those things were the mistakes of public housing in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But what was happening in Yonkers, which didn't get a lot of attention at the time because everyone was operating on the fears of the last bunch of mistakes, was they were using scattered site housing, defensible space theories, to basically integrate smaller numbers of townhouses, of single-family townhouses, into these neighborhoods in ways that would not destabilize the communities, and it worked. But of course, nobody was anticipating anything but the worst case scenario, as we tend to do in this country when it comes to ideas about race. They were imagining the worst case scenario, not a plausible victory.
Right. I mean, I mean, one of the things about the series as I've watched it so far that, I mean, it's the same argument you hear everywhere else, where this is not about race; it's about who we want as neighbors. It's about class.
That's not class. About
if you economics.
If you can afford to move next to me,
economics is a word being used.
Yeah. It's not a green. It's not a black and white issue. It's a green issue.
It's a green issue.
That's
right.
that's sort of the mask of it all. And we were, you know, for many of these people working in middle class in East Yonkers, white people, they almost to a person would cite being quote chased out of the Bronx. Close quote, you know.
That came out in the piece, too.
A generation earlier, the Bronx was, in many ways, one of the bad laboratories for destabilized neighborhoods, massive, you know, high-rise projects. And so by this time, any public housing had a bad rap among white middle-class residents of any neighborhood in the country. But you know, it was funny. Bill and I, when we were on location scouting, we had the British reporter with us on that one trip. A guy came over from, I think, The Observer, and we pulled up in front of the actual townhouses where we were going to film. You know, they're now a quarter century old, and they're mm-hmm. still housing families, and they've not wrecked the neighborhoods, and they're not sources of crime, and the property values are still intact. And he looked at them, and he said, "This is what the fight was about," but of course, that's with perfect hindsight. You know.
Well, it also evolved. I mean, which is part of our story as well. You know, to become these townhouse scattered site developments, right. As opposed to towers that, you know, I guess HUD sort of initially envisioned.
Yeah, HUD. Even when they weren't going to put up towers, they wanted walk ups. They wanted basically walk up apartments. And the leading architect and consultant on the case, Oscar Newman, fought them on that. He wanted single family. Let them have the same sensation as homeowners. This is your house. This is your home. This is your yard. You take care of what we call yours. And the argument was that it's these nebulous areas like in high rise courtyards and stairwells and lobbies that the residents themselves can't control. And where the problems begin, and some of this was, you know, when Oscar Newman would say this, there were a lot of sort of left leaning housing people and who would say, you know, you basically have a preconceived racial notion there that just because they're poor they're not. But the truth is, housing has struggled. You know, this level of poverty, yeah. It has struggled to. And what he was saying was, if we do this in such a way that it becomes part of the community that you're placing it in rather than a segregated unit of low-income housing that doesn't interact with the community, the outcomes will be better. And he was right. I think the sad part of this, if there's a back end of it, which we don't really get into, but is Oscar Newman's reasoning was so correct that it was a reason to take down a lot of big housing projects, but not replace them with anything. Sufficient numbers of scattered site.
Like we did here.
Right.
Baltimore, same
right.
Thing.
Right. What Oscar Newman was not arguing, he was arguing for more scattered site housing. He wasn't arguing for less housing. He was arguing for more better housing.
Right.
But of course, half of his argument led to, the destruction of a significant number of units around the country and the failure to replace them with other scattered site in meaningful numbers is a whole other argument.
And wasn't part of the Yonkers story also that Yonkers was accused of intentionally kind of segregating housing and school systems? That was
right.
part
of it. It was the initial allegation.
And that was proven.
Right. That was the finding of the judge. And that was the first time. This was amazing to me because the case was filed in 1980 in the waning years of the Carter administration. And it was the first time that they had made that causal link between, housing.
And education.
Everybody lives here and everybody goes to school here and education. Yeah.
Successfully by looking back at the minutes of the Housing Authority in Yonkers where the officials were saying bluntly, we'll put it in the same square mile of West Yonkers because we don't want it anywhere near the white people. There was no subterfuge to what they were doing. They were violating Brown
v. Board
by using federal money to hyper-segregate. So the people who would look upon Yonkers or any of these moments, the one we had in Baltimore County a decade ago or what's going on in Dallas now, and they would say, oh, it's just social engineering. You're trying to, No. The social engineering began back in the 1930s and 1940s when we started erecting public housing and using FHA redlining. This was a plan to keep people of color and people who are poor in a different America. And we spent federal money. We spent our own public treasure to do it. And it was a plan. And the social engineering began back then. So the idea that you're raising the notion that it begins with some judge who's confronted with the history and has to make a ruling based on constitutional grounds, oh, now you're going to object to social engineering? Where were you for the last 50 years? There's a hypocrisy there that a lot of the white opposition doesn't want to acknowledge.
Have people reacted from Yonkers to your miniseries yet? I mean,
some.
The mayor is still alive, right? The original mayor that Jim Belushi plays,
Angelo Martinelli.
Who was ironically
early on in his tenure as a civic leader, sort of led the fight against the housing and sort of made sure that housing was stuck over in the southwest corner of Yonkers, and then had a change of heart. But I mean, for the most part, I mean, I haven't heard anything to the contrary, and I've stayed in touch over the years with many of these folks, although some have died. They talk about how real it is and how right we managed to get it. And I guess that was heartening to me because I was really concerned about the Hollywoodization
It may be that that people are polite and that if they didn't like it, they don't talk to us. But we had a screening in Yonkers a lot of the survivors were there. And I
don't think the people in Yonkers are really that polite. I think they would tell us.
Well, they would tell you. By the way, Bill.
Yo, can look it up. I'm telling you. Steiner, you can look it up.
You know how Bill became, as a reporter, he was like, he comes back today, he comes back tomorrow, and pretty soon he's part of your family.
Right,
and he's
right.
done that with all of Baltimore. That's Bill's sort of legend as a reporter in Baltimore. I would walk around Yonkers with him after he'd been there just a couple years, and he'd be like, hi, Bill. Hi. How's Patty? How are you doing? Are you back here for a while? Can we take you to dinner tomorrow night?
This might be a bit of an exaggeration.
No, it's not. Every third person would come up and hug him. And it's like
every third person.
Yeah. All right, every fifth person.
Me.
There were lots of hugs.
Yeah, a lot of hugs.
I'm telling you.
You're a huggable guy, is Rosie.
Everywhere I go,
there were a couple election cycles where he voted in Yonkers three or four times. I'm pretty sure.
That's true. I'm now on my. This is the third mayor of Yonkers I've interviewed. I mean, the third sitting mayor. That doesn't include.
Right.
The past mayor
and the one in the movie's gone.
Spoiler alert?
No, it's not history. I cannot spoil anything. Is that? I didn't even know that was in the series. I've only gotten.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, You want to spoil it? You go ahead.
You should have read the book.
You spoiled it because I didn't know it.
You should oughta.
But he, you know, Bill really did re-report it. And I think he's right. We would have heard from people if we had taken egregious liberties, I think. And we tried to stay to the core values of I think, what the issues were. And, I mean, in that screening, I actually couldn't stay in my seat. I was too nervous because there were so many people there who were being portrayed on screen. So I went to the back of the theater, and I didn't see this. But there was one moment where a councilwoman, Vinnie Restiano, in the film, played by Winona Ryder, played beautifully by Winona Ryder.
She did a great job.
Where she's talking about a political opponent who beat her in an election. And she says, you'll have to bleep this out, but she basically used the line, which Vinnie, the real Vinnie, gave her. The line in an interview that she said, "Oh, Nick Longo should get ass cancer," and which is Vinny's language, not Winona's, but Winona threw it right in the film.
Oh yeah,
that went right in the movie as an ad lib. Anyway, she's
good.
Not Winona.
The line comes up. I know it's coming. I can't bear to look. Nick Longo, who she's saying it about, is sitting about two rows away, and. I had to walk out. I was like, I didn't want to see Nick Longo get up in a fury. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a horror show. Anyway, at the end, I stood out by the popcorn machine waiting to take a punch on the chin because, you know, it's Yonkers. If they want to, I got to stand here for a while and take the punch if they want. Anyway, Neil DeLuca.
You had to wear a name. Today,
I didn't talk to Neil. I didn't get a chance to talk to Nick Longo, but Neil DeLuca was sitting next to him. And Neil DeLuca, another guy portrayed in the film, came up to me and said, "Oh, Neil loved that. I mean, Nick loved that." He said that he loved that line. He was cracking up. And Vinny apparently left and said thanks to the HBO people. And, like, they basically, the past is the past, apparently.
So the past is the past, or did they just said, this is who we are, and we're not ashamed of who we are, and this is what we did. We were right.
Or it's where we were. It's where we were.
Where we were.
A little bit. I mean, there is a little bit sense from a lot of people in Yonkers that they got very worked up over an outcome that was not what everyone feared. Not everybody feels that way. There are some people who feel that, you know, and there are people who point to the fact that Yonkers then was 80% white and is now about 55% white. And they say, well, look, you know. But the truth is, the New York area is now 40% people of color. You know, integration is not about keeping places 80% white. It's about the browning of America and doing so in a way that you don't destabilize communities. That we do this in a way that encourages power sharing and the sharing of geographic space.
How difficult is it for you all as writers to take something like that which could really be dull and boring? No, really.
Well,
good.
There are some
people. And keeping it dull and boring.
Keeping it as dull as you made this. How did you manage to do that?
We have a gift for that.
Well,
I
have a particular gift for it. He meaning Mr. Simon, as we're now required to call him.
Stop it. That's not what you call. That's not what you call me when we're alone.
That's true.
That's his father.
I've lost my train of thought with that. But the
you made it all. Absolutely true and accurate and completest, and everything was in there, and there were explanations for everything, including the redistrictings and all the different elections and who switched what party when.
But
I would have to shave that down into something. I would put on my little drama hat, and
true.
But that's it. I mean, the secret is in. Seems to me is because what I meant to say was, I mean, that is, you can take those kind of hearings and meetings with judges and backroom conversations, and they can really kind of put you to sleep, but it doesn't. I mean, you have to really build something in there. Or cut it or do it in a certain way that kind of just draws out the drama. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's.
I mean, I think it was. I don't want to say it was in the writing, but it was probably in the writing. But it was also in the filming of it
and
the cutting of it.
And the acting as well.
Paul Haggis shot it beautifully.
You were lucky to get Paul Haggis. What an incredible director!
And he did it. He did it. You know, he was willing to have. He'll tell you he was willing to have in those meetings an imperfection of frame, like if some guy's arm. Throws up, or if you know this guy blocks your main character, you know, so that you can't see the guy for 3 seconds of film, and the way sort of that sort of discordant meeting would be, he was willing to be very brave with the camera, and I think it shows. I mean, I think it's a very well photographed, well depicted story. Yeah. So a lot of that is the directing. We got great performances out of Boy, you know, Oscar Isaac as Nick Wasisco is just is a tour de force.
He was great.
Catherine Keener as a white resident who makes an emotional turn about the housing.
Yeah.
Again, Winona, Alfred Molina as the as demagogue,
right.
as Henry Spallone, who personally I think Bill and I want to – don't we want to spin him off into a half-hour show?
We do. The Hank Spallone show.
The Hank Spallone show. Just have him be
– you could look that up.
Yeah, that was
yeah, the angriest, toothpickingest.
Oh, that was – what a great character he developed. I mean, the toothpick.
The toothpick has its own agent now.
That's right. Yeah.
But I mean, speaking of him and the sort of the folks who were opposed to the housing, I mean, one of our concerns, I think, one of my concerns at least, was not to make these people cartoonish, you know, and make them, you know, demonize them. I mean, clearly the piece, I think, has a point of view, you know, in looking at what happened and what was ordered and what should have happened. And but... you know, I mean, the Spallone character in particular, especially with the accent and the toothpick.
Yeah,
and
I mean, he was who he was. I mean, you know, I mean, that, it's a pretty accurate depiction of.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, Bill's using all of the real dialogue when you're at the public settings and the hearings and all. But there was an underlying fear that was just raw fear. That wasn't that that you know, in some ways. Those their homes were all these people had, and they felt that a social experiment, political experiment, was being undertaken at their risk. And now, so there had to be a way to acknowledge. And I think the Mary Dorman character was played by Catherine Keener was our way of
doing that.
Of
and
doing
the other
that.
Thing you did, I mean, I've only been through three episodes. I mean, there's six altogether.
Six. Yeah.
Six, right?
Oh, wait a minute.
Huh?
No, go ahead.
I've been through three episodes. Only four have been out there. I've only seen three.
Why
as of this taping.
Why haven't you seen the fourth, Mark?
Yeah, why haven't you
just
seen all
of
them?
Just because I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it. I'll get to my HBO Go and I'll watch it.
What were you doing that was more important?
It got me. I'm not sure. I was kind of scared just to sit down and see the rest. No, it was. But what it seems you're doing in this, too, is when you go to the folks who are living in the housing projects, Dominican families and black families in the project. That's kind of interesting. I like the way you also saying that up is this, because of the way they're being dehumanized is showing the exact opposite in the pieces you portray.
Right. And it's tricky because until the housing gets built, they don't really have agency yet. You know, this is a government that is all white. It's an all-white right. council. The department heads are all white. The opposition is pretty much all white. And with the exception of even the NAACP lead counsel is white, Michael Sussman, so that you're looking at a situation where nobody for the longest time is vocalizing or affirming on behalf of people of color in this piece. Now we could construct something that would make you feel that it was a more egalitarian point of view in the early episodes, but it would be dishonest because
right.
that's part of the problem was that it was all you know this was white people arguing about people they didn't know in the projects. But in the last episodes, you'll see that once these houses are built, some of these ordinary people have real agency. Some of them become some of the heroes of the piece.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how this ends up with this. And I just think it's – I also like the way it's shot. I mean, just the way, I guess, Haggis decided or we both decided how to kind of shoot it in the kind of light you shot it in. I mean, it adds to the kind of – tension in the movie. In the miniseries.
The way it's cut too. I mean, the way it's edited.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
The way
right.
it's
some beautiful editing, film editing. It turned out a lot better than it might have, which is probably true of every project.
Every project would be like that. But yeah, this is.
But
I remember in the very beginning, years back when you mentioned this book to me, Bill, and we talked about how you wanted to do this piece, and you thought about it, and you've been struggling with it. I don't know if you'll ever get it done, but it got done. It's just, I think it's a very powerful piece. I really want to read the book now.
It was real perseverance on Bill's part because, you know, there were times where he was white-knuckling it through some version of some episode thinking, what am I doing this for? You know, it just got bumped by something else. Because, you know, the truth is
– Generation Kill.
Yeah, it got bumped by
–
it kept getting bumped by the stuff that had news pegs, Generation Kill for the Iraq War, Treme for Katrina.
Right.
So the one thing about race in America was it never goes away. So this piece kept getting – you know, listen, it's about segregation in public housing. You know, look around. They're still fighting about it. It'll be here in 2-3 years. Well, we said that a couple of times, and so you know, Bill was Bill had a right to be in therapy if he wanted to be, but you know, he made it to the end. He made it to the end, and it got made. And it got made well.
And it did, and I'm really looking forward to these last three episodes.
I look forward to hearing what you think of the.
I will let you know as soon as I finish. I'm going to write you both an email. This is what I think.
Yeah. Bill would like a book report.
I didn't do well in that in high school. I didn't actually get through high school.
So I was going to say you didn't do well in anything in high school.
That's true. I mean, not at all. Not at all. No. I never did get a chance to graduate from City, but that's okay. Well, I want to thank you both for coming by. This has been great.
Thank you.
Bill Simon and David Zorzi.
David Zorzi.
Yeah, those guys.
Yes, guys. Bill Zorzi and David Simon. Great to see you here. And three more episodes. Show Me a Hero this weekend will be the
fifth and sixth.
And two more episodes. Yeah, so check it out or go to HBO Go and see it there. Good to see you all. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Mark. Good to see you. Thank you.